Wistful Thinking is brought to you by the Cage Club Podcast Network. For all things movie and nostalgia podcasts, go to cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me.
Welcome to Wistful Thinking, where we talk about all sorts of things, including but not limited to revisiting beloved pieces of media from our youth. I am Kara Gale O'Regan, and with me today is not my regular co-host, Jordan Poland Clark, but instead Cage Club Podcast Network co-founder, Joey Lewandowski. Hello, Joey.
Hi, Kara.
What's up?
I am super excited to talk about what we're going to talk about today. I am so sad that Jordan cannot be here, but Jordan's computer is in computer heaven and is unavailable for us to do this. But that means that you and I get to do a backdoor pilot for the podcast that will never be, may possibly one day be, but for now will not be. Something we've been talking about for a long time.
A really long time. So this series of unfortunate events has led to a very fortunate turn of events that we finally get to do this podcast, which we were like kind of planning on doing.
Yes.
Anyway,
yep.
Kind of.
Yep.
Just a special, very special edition of Wistful Thinking during the month of February to coincide with the Winter Olympics. We're bumping it up a week, and now we're going to do, instead of two episodes, three episodes. And so today's episode is going to be about the 1992 film The Cutting Edge, which is one of my favorite movies of all time.
So I had never seen this movie before, and I want to offer a little bit of backstory. I was on the first episode of this, and I don't remember how much we talked about our history, you and my shared history, but we were friends in college and then sort of just drifted apart because, you know, we weren't super close in college. And then we found out 4 years ago that we were both working from home and watching like hours and hours and hours of the Winter Olympics each day. And so we then talked nonstop for like 2 weeks about all things Sochi.
Yeah, I was like barely working at the time because I was actually in the middle of doctor housing myself.
Oh.
Successfully doctor housing myself.
It's not lupus.
It's not lupus, but it is a figure skating obsession, and it has been since I was a little kid. I was like right at the prime age for the 1992 and 1994 Winter Olympics, which is very timely right now, because as we record this, I, Tonya has been in theaters for a while. So
did you see it yet?
I did. I finally did. Last week? 2 weeks ago?
Good. Good.
It was great. I liked it a lot. It was a lot sadder than I was prepared for, I think.
It's kind of tonally all over the place. Like, there's funny parts, and then there's really sad parts. And I really liked it, and I think Margot Robbie is great in it, but my one sort of criticism of it is that it doesn't really know what it wants to be at all times. Mm. And I think if it was, I don't know that I'd want to see a 2 hour just sad movie, and I don't know if I'd want to see a 2 hour just slapstick movie. I think they could have done either, but where they sort of landed and tried to like balance, like toe the line between the two, I was like, like I like parts of this, but I don't like all of it. And I was a little sad by that.
Yeah. I don't know. I had a lot of mixed feelings. I thought she was great.
Yeah.
But at the same time, she's still Margot Robbie.
Yes.
And she's still like an extraordinarily beautiful, like long and lean woman. And the real Tonya Harding is kind of like boxy and scrappy and like not, I mean, she's beautiful in her own way, but not Margot Robbie beautiful. So it was like kind of a little hard to let go of that disbelief. I also went to see it kind of like right in the middle of binge watching Big Little Lies.
Oh, which okay.
Was an interesting bookend, I think, for the movie, just because both are so steeped in like domestic abuse. So
absolutely.
It made it like kind of that much sadder that like that was kind of what I was thinking about. But yeah, it was good. I liked it a lot.
I don't know if I don't remember, because I would have been four for the 92 Olympics. So I don't think I saw those. I do remember really early on, I want to say Scott Hamilton, maybe? We filmed a lot, or on VHS, off our VCR, we taped a lot of figure skating. And I remember watching certain skaters over and over and over again. And I remember, I don't know why. I think it was just like something jazzy and fun. I don't know. I don't know. I guess it's always like, I don't know what it was about it, but I just was super,
It's
super excited.
captivating. I mean, it's incredible. It has all of the high stakes of like sports, if you're into that sort of thing. But then also like all this
Yeah, fun music.
theatricality. Is that a word? I don't know
Yeah,
if
I
that's a
think
word.
so.
It's a word now. Fun music, fun costumes, but not just like fun. Like these are is it I love it because it's like this perfect hybrid of like art and sport. And yeah, oh man, it's captivating.
It's the
And
best.
it's Scott Hamilton in particular, although I think personally he's kind of a dingleberry.
No, but tell us how you really feel.
He's always credited with the quote of like the only disability in life is a bad attitude, which I have qualms about. But that aside, he was an incredibly dynamic skater. You know, I think something that you see in The Cutting Edge, and of course you see in I, Tonya, was is this kind of like friction between traditional figure skating and like people who want to make it like hip and cool. And I
Yes.
think Scott Hamilton in particular is one of those people. He was the first person ever, maybe, or maybe just the first American male to like land a backflip
Whoa, okay.
in competition. And that was his like signature move. So he was always really and long before our personal favorite color commentators, Johnny and Tara, were on the scene, Scott Hamilton went on to be like the jazzy color commentator on figure skating for most of my life.
Well, I'm glad you brought up our favorites, Tara and Johnny, because we were going to our plan before life got in the way, and by life got in the way, meaning I started like six new podcasts, and also other things happened. But we were going to have a podcast called We're With Weir, which was a working title, but I think it would have worked. And
Pretty solid.
we were just going to cover figure skating movies, and we were going to release a bunch during the Olympics, maybe backdate a bunch and maybe record one a day during the Olympics or something. Who knows? But that didn't happen. Maybe for the 2022 games. Who knows? But,
I have a whole spreadsheet that lays it all out,
it was
and
an amazing amount of work that you put in so much prep into this, and I felt bad that we didn't do it because, like, it was, the year and the synopsis and like where to watch it and like this like crisscross cross section of like spanning literally close to 100 years in cinema history of figure skating movies, and I was like, oh my God, like this is amazing, and then it just didn't happen. But we get to talk about three of some kind, Olympic movies, figure skating movies, ice skating movies, whatever, over these next couple weeks, and I am super excited.
And when I first made that spreadsheet, I, Tonya was just, it like in pre-production. It was like maybe it'll come out in 2018, who knows? You know, barely a glimmer in anyone's eye, and now it's winning all sorts of awards, so that's exciting. So just to get it out of the way, I know the Olympics are like super problematic in just about every way.
Yep.
I mean, pick an issue, it's a problem. But I cannot help but love them so much.
It's the best. It's the best. It's the best thing that's also the worst thing.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. But this year's Olympics kind of has like an extra sinister quality to it, not just because of the whole North Korea, like, are we all gonna die in a nuclear winter? Who knows? Situation, which is like
It's
ridiculous
fun to think
and
about.
bad enough as it is. But I don't know if you've been paying attention at all to the legal case of Dr. Larry Nassar.
I feel like calling him Dr. Larry Nassar is giving him a little bit too much formality and credit for a guy
Yeah.
who should rot in prison for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
Just
All
like
eternity, really.
it's heartbreaking, it's devastating. The only I mean like my favorite, I mean, I love the Winter Olympics more than the Summer Olympics, but in the I watch the shit out of them both times, and I think there's a real comparison in terms of athletic ability, but also sort of the type of athlete and also kind of like
Yeah.
the body between like figure skaters and gymnastics, and just seeing, like, having such a focus personally now with these movies and with the Olympics coming up on, like, figure skating, and especially talking to you, and you've been so excited about, you know, watching the qualifying and everything like that. And then on the other hand, you have these other athletes who are also incredible, and sort of the summer comparison to these. And then you see, like, you know, Michaela Maroney, like, there was talk that she was going to be fined $100,000 for breaking her
Most
NDA
fucked
to
up thing in the
testify. And,
world.
like, come on. That didn't happen though, right?
No. I don't but believe it did. Allie Reisman's
Yes.
victim impact statement
Yep.
was just so good and so incredible. So, if anyone's listening and doesn't know who this guy is, he was the team doctor for the U.S. Olympic gymnastics team. He also, I guess, was employed through the
Michigan
University
State, I
of
think.
Michigan State.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Michigan is like a huge training hub, not just for gymnastics, but also for figure skating. And so just like it wasn't just gymnastic athletes who came forward and filed claims against this guy, over 100, like 50 people, I think, which is just so disgusting and horrific. But dancers and some other athletes too, because he was like
Like a school physician or whatever, right?
school, yeah, like an
Yeah.
orthopedist who's renowned. So like all of these different kind of elite athletes went to see him. So I feel like the way that the Harvey Weinstein thing was like just the tip of the iceberg as far as like shitty,
Yep.
abusive men in Hollywood is concerned. I feel like this guy is probably just the very tip of the iceberg in elite sports because it's such an environment that like just makes that breeds it. And the U.S. Olympic Committee knew about this guy for several years. You
Yep.
know, they had multiple complaints about him, and they still haven't even like issued a statement about this. So I just wanted to address that because it's been weighing heavy on my mind and kind of like tamping down my excitement about figure skating because I'm just like, ugh.
It's awful. Like
Just.
it's just really, really awful. And I mean, I don't know the timeline of this all. Like, you know, this episode's gonna come out in a couple days. I don't know if, like, when is he supposed to be sentenced?
I don't know because as of Friday, when I was reading a lot of the victim impact statements, like there were still every day there were more women coming forward and saying like I want to make a statement about
Because there were
this. And
supposed to be
so
4 days, but I think there's probably going to be more than that, right? There's going to, yeah.
yeah, and it's all just people talking about what they did to him. Like it's not even the actual sentencing yet. So I don't know. I don't know. We'll see. We'll keep you
And,
posted.
like, the crazy thing, the sad thing is that, like, people were just, you know, they were called to testify, they wanted to testify, and, like, they're coming forward on the stand and, like, admitting that he molested them or whatever, like, that they hadn't said anything before, and, like, now they're just, like, they're, you know, they're empowered by everybody else. Like, it's just, it's uplifting and devastating all at once. Like, it's,
Yeah.
man.
Yeah. Well, let's
Yeah, but anyway, DB Sweeney and Moira Kelly, right?
Yeah. Oh my God. What a great movie, The Cutting Edge is. The synopsis is a temperamental figure skater and former hockey player try to win Olympic gold as figure skating pairs team. So it opens at the 88 Olympics in Calgary. And the movie kind of spans the training time between that Olympics and when it ends at the 92 Olympics in Albertville.
When I was watching this movie, I was kind of seeing it like it's sort of in a way like what if Tonya Harding and Nancy Kerrigan had to do a duo, like skate in a pair? Because, you know, obviously it's a man and a woman and not two women, but he's essentially kind of playing in a lot of ways the Tonya Harding role. Like, he doesn't know why it has to be like this classical music, and he wants to play, like, you know, hardcore rock or whatever, like, whatever, you know, the, like, right up front we have to say that this movie is extremely predictable in just about every way, and yet still almost cried while watching this movie. Like,
It's so good.
it's exactly what you think it is, and yet that doesn't matter. And
Yeah.
so you see this, you
Well,
know, pristine basically ballerina of a figure skater who does everything by the book, and she's, you know, the ice queen, but she's also like the best skater. And then he's like, yeah, why don't we play some like rock music and like just be like dudes out there? And it's like, well, of course that's what it's going to be. But I was also like, you know, having seen I, Tonya, it's like that's sort of what she wanted to do. Like, she doesn't know why. Like, the button, right? He's like, I'm not going to button this button. And I was thinking about I, Tonya, like, well, why do I have to wear what they want me to wear? Why can't I wear what I want to wear? And I was like, wow.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the shitty parts of figure skating is that, like, as fun as the theatricality of it is, like, you're not just judged on your technical ability, like, you're also judged on these kind of frivolous aspects in a way that, like, you have to kind of work within the existing framework of this very traditional and patriarchal system so that you can like meet these certain benchmarks to be judged in a certain way. And that's l less true now than it was like when this movie was made because of the way that they've changed the scoring system and the judging and that sort of thing. But it still like totally factors in to how they're judged, which sucks because you can have a skater like Tanya who is or was like this total fucking powerhouse, like incredible athlete, but because she doesn't conform to this, like, you know, she doesn't look like she skated out of a snow globe and she wants to skate to ZZ Top instead of like, I don't know, the can-can or whatever.
And they even say it in this movie, like the announcer, you know, when they're trying to qualify for the Olympics and there's a three couple skating for two spots and there's the one that advances and it's, you know, down to our guys and the other team. And they skate well, but they get like five sixes or whatever. And the announcer even says in the movie, I wrote it down, sometimes the scores reflect more than what's happening out there on the ice. And it's like, that just sucks. But I mean, I know that it's true to life, or it was, but you know, it's just like you can do everything right, and just because you're not doing it the way, or you're not the person that the judges or that the, you know, the country or whatever wants to send to Albertville, like you just don't get to go, even though you're better. Like it's just shitty.
Yeah. And now they've changed how they do the Olympic selection. So now, and this happened last time around for the 20, what year is it?
This is
2016?
2018, so the last one was
2018?
2014.
2014. In 2014, among the women's field, in the national championships are not actually trials. They like do this weird sort of calculus and try and figure out how they can field the best team at the Olympics. So you can win nationals and not actually make the Olympic team, which she didn't win, but she came in third last time. Mirai Nagasu, who made the team this year, she actually was put on the team as an alternate behind Ashley Wagner, who didn't even
Came
place.
in fourth or something, or
Yeah, but because she had been a more consistent skater overall, they wanted her on the team to field a better team in Sochi. And this time around, that actually happened in the men's field. I don't even remember the guy who won national, or I think he won nationals, or he got a silver medal, one or the other. And he got placed on the team as an alternate. And Adam Rippon, who came in fourth, I believe, is in that third slot. But I'm super excited about that because he is an incredible skater, and he is one of the two first openly gay men that the United States is sending to the Olympics, the
Wow,
Winter
good for
Olympics.
him.
So, yeah, that's actually very
And
exciting.
good for us, kind of, as a country.
Yeah, I mean, Mike Pence is still going to be leading the Olympic delegation, so
Ugh.
there's that. But, you know.
Is so a question for you that has nothing to do with this movie, which I mean, you
Yeah.
know, we are almost 20 minutes in and we have not really talked about this movie much. But so Russia's not allowed to compete in the Olympics, but still like hundreds of athletes are going to be there from Russia. Is my
Yeah.
girl Yulia Lipnitskaya going, or is she not going?
No, she actually retired a few years
What?
ago. It's hard to find information in English. It's mostly in Russian, but Yulia Lipnitskaya, during the last Olympics, did that incredible girl in the red dress skate to Schindler's List, which sounds like a terrible idea. Sounds like maybe not a great choice, but it was pretty incredible. And she did this one crazy spin move where she would actually like dislocate her hip so that she could pull her leg all the way up to her face and
It
like
was
do this crazy.
ridiculous.
Yeah. But she was still very young, still had clearly not gone through puberty. Like this is like the frustrating thing for an enthusiast of women's sports is that a lot of times, especially sports like figure skating and gymnastics, the women who excel are the women who manage to like stay prepubescent, which can
Yeah.
lead to all sorts of problems. And I guess she actually retired a couple years ago because of complications from an eating disorder.
Oh.
So
'Cause
sadly, she will not be there.
she was only like 14 or 15, I think, right? When they're,
Yeah, she was really young.
I mean, whatever they said her age was, like she wasn't actually that age. Like she was younger or whatever, but yeah, that's a
Oh,
bummer.
yeah,
I
maybe.
think 'cause I think I
Yeah.
remember there being a controversy. So they said she was like 15 or 16, but I think she was actually like a year or two younger. I don't remember. But she was just a little baby and she was so good and she was so great to watch. But
Yeah. And all her compatriot, Yevgenia Medvedev, a bunch of, I don't know how it's pronounced. She's great too. I don't think that there are any Russian skaters skating, actually, which is disappointing
That's very, because
because
they're really good.
they are. The Russian government has really funneled quite a lot of resources into their athletes, and especially, I think figure skating is really like their prestige sport. So, it's disappointing,
Actually, not to
but
derail further, but did you watch on
oh
Netflix
wait,
the
nope.
documentary Icarus?
I did not hold that thought.
Okay.
I just looked at the Wikipedia article.
For what?
There is for the figure skating at the 2018 Winter
Okay.
Olympics, there will be a delegation of Olympic athletes from Russia as opposed to the Russian Federation.
Huh. Okay.
So there will be some
Good.
tension with the Russians, at
Good.
least. Yeah, there will also be a pair from North Korea competing. They're the only North Korean skaters, so that's interesting.
Well, actually, speaking, sort of going back to this movie before we detour again to Icarus for a second, but the North and South Korean hockey teams are forming one hockey team, and so we have hockey in this movie, so that's also relatively timely.
Yeah.
Not that they're gonna do anything, because I don't think they're very good at hockey, but you know, they're uniting, I guess, so that's good. Question mark.
I don't know. It'll be interesting.
So Icarus is a Netflix-produced documentary that it began as this guy who, I don't know if he was a documentarian, I don't know if he was a bicyclist, but he wanted to dope himself up to compete in this race that they say is basically if you take the 7 toughest days of the Tour de France and put them back to back over the span of a week. That's this race.
No, thank you.
And so he competed 1 year clean and he came in like 15th or something. And so then he was like, okay, so next year I'm gonna dope, because there's like, he was saying that like he's in this pack with a few other guys he could conceivably be better than, but then like the top 10 were like this next tier above. And so he was convinced that they were all doping. Even though there was testing, even though there was all this different stuff, whatever, he was convinced that they were doping. So he's like, for next year, I'm gonna dope. I'm gonna do all this stuff, get it, you know, figure out a way to cheat the system, and I'm gonna go back and compete. And so he starts to do that, and then he gets in touch with this Russian doctor who basically, the documentary shifts at this point, and it becomes about this guy who doped all of the Russian athletes, and like, you know, when they were in Sochi, like he explains how they beat the system, and it becomes this whole thing about like, you know, why is this guy helping me? And then while they're making the documentary, the news breaks about this guy, and then like, you know, he's fearing for his life, and he flees to America, and like it's this whole like complicated story. But they talk about like they have like these Russian athletes in there, like you know, footage of them, you know, crying and bawling about how like after they were suspended from the 2016 Olympics, the Summer Olympics, you know, and then they were eventually reinstated or whatever. But like, it's this weird doping documentary that becomes about the whole Russian doping scandal and about specifically about Sochi and all this different stuff. I'm like, it's really, it's long, but it's interesting.
That sounds interesting.
So I would say check that out. I think it's, you know, I don't think it's going away from Netflix ever because they produced it, but check it out. It's called Icarus, and it's got some subtitle I don't know, but it's about doping.
Yeah. There's lots of interesting documentaries related to everything we're talking about. I recently watched The Diplomat, which was made in 2013 as part of ESPN's 9 for 9 series.
Okay. That's the series about the women athletes, right?
Yeah, yep. they did it kind of like the 30 for 30, but they were celebrating the 40th anniversary of Title IX, which mm-hmm. is a federal law that requires that any educational institution that gets any financial aid from the federal government has to have equal opportunity based on gender. And so, like, one of the big places that that's manifested is in sports. And so the Diplomat is actually about Katarina Witt, who was a figure skater from East Germany. Mm-hmm. So before the Berlin Wall fell, and they kind of look at her celebrity status in East Germany and how that afforded her, you know, kind of all of these special privileges that most East Germans didn't have, and kind of the pull between the East and West. And that was really good. And then there is actually a 30 for 30 about figure skating about Nancy and Tanya.
Ooh.
Which I highly recommend, because I think actually Itania is based on some of the interviews that they got for that documentary, or that was like the jumping off point.
Okay.
For making the movie, yeah, and it's like the documentary version of Itania, but like more about Nancy Kerrigan too. Who, I don't know. I would say actually more than anything, it's about the media coverage of it.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Which, yeah. I don't know if Itania really gets into it. I mean, the media is there, and you yeah. see the media, like, you know, camping out on her front lawn and everything, but it's not about, like, it's really just about Tanya, which is cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really cover the era as much as just her in that era.
Yeah, and I think that the 30 for 30 documentary does a good job.
30 for 30, when a 30 for 30 is good, like, it's really good. Like, they can kill it.
Yeah, I thankfully have not seen many bad ones. So.
Yes.
That's good. Also, one last documentary that I don't remember the name of, so I'm going to look it up
Solid.
Really quickly, is Johnny Weir's documentary that he made during the Sochi Olympics.
Oh.
Called Johnny Weir to Russia with Love, the impact of Russia's anti-gay laws on athletes and activists
oh.
in the days leading up to the 2014 Winter Olympic Games.
Cool.
It was really interesting because he was not out when he was competing. And like his stance was just like, it's kind of nobody's business. And if you're paying attention, like it's fairly obvious like what my sexuality is, but
right.
I don't want to talk about it. And has since been very out, but you kind of see his kind of relationship to queerness kind of change over the course
huh.
of making the documentary, because before he didn't really think of it as this political thing, and then he realized like just what privilege it is to live in a country where he doesn't have to, or at least as of when he made the documentary, he didn't have to fear for his life, you know, simply because he was a gay man.
Right. I don't mean to laugh, you know, but I mean, like,
yeah,
it's just, yeah, I mean, like, we went backwards in time,
right? Yes. Sadly, that is true.
And not in a fun way.
But fun way, The Cutting Edge, 1992.
Oh, man, The Cutting Edge. So, where to even begin with this masterpiece of a film?
It's such a good, like, tight 101 minutes, I think, and there was just like nothing in it that doesn't need to be there. Like, even if it is as predictable as you say it is, which I don't necessarily think is true, it just it all of the beats are like perfect, and it has really good pacing, and there's just nothing and all of the good sweet training montages.
Oh my god. I wrote down, I probably missed a few, but I tried to make note of every time there was a montage. There was a Doug falls down while Kate laughs at him montage.
Oh my god, my favorite one.
Doug teaching Kate how to play hockey montage. Uh-huh. There's a workout montage. There's another brief training montage. There's an alcohol celebration montage. That was five. I'm sure I missed a couple. I'm sure I missed a couple other training ones.
I think there are like a couple more training montages.
But there were a few of those where they're like literally back-to-back scenes. Like it's like Rocky IV in that way, where that movie is 85 minutes long, and the final fight is like 20 minutes, and then of the other like 65 minutes, it's, you know, probably 40 minutes of either montages or clips from previous movies. It's just a masterpiece in that way. And so here, I mean, if you like bang for your buck, if you want to see, you know, Doug scoring goal after goal after goal on poor sweet Kate, like, check out that hockey montage.
Yeah. But if you want to see him get humiliated over and over again, definitely check out the montage where he falls down a bunch and she yells toe pick at him repeatedly.
So what's weird about it a little bit is that obviously he's a good skater because he plays ice hockey and everything like that, but he seems like the kind of guy, maybe just because he's next to her, but he seems like the kind of guy who's sort of like an enforcer, like, you know, an attacker, like a wing, like an aggressive hockey player. But he's like, no, I'm the best skater out there. And like, I don't know if that's like his hubris talk, but it seems like he's trying to say like he's a great skater, but like, clearly he's not. Or is it just saying that like being a great skater doesn't necessarily translate to this other thing?
Yeah. I mean, the whole toe peck thing is based on the fact that you actually wear different skates when figure skating or playing hockey. And figure skates actually have that like serrated front part. That's the toe pick.
Yep.
And that's used for jumps and all sorts of fun figure skatey things. And so if you're used to skating super fast on hockey skates and then you go from that to figure skates, the toe pick a lot of times will kind of trip you up. But also, I mean, you're skating in a very different style for a very different purpose. So I think, you know, with hockey skating, it's sloppy isn't the word that I'm looking for, but it's just, you know, you're not,
it's not finesse, it's just aggressive. It's
definitely not finesse. Yeah. And also, I mean, figure skating is so balletic and yep. requires really good proprioception, which is your perception and your sense of like where your body exists in space and like where your limbs are and that sort of thing, where I don't think that you really need to be that aware of it with hockey skating because you're just plowing into things, whereas with
figure
skating, I think
that's probably
like,
simplifying things a little bit, but I don't know enough about hockey to really defend that, but I see where you're going.
Yeah, and like with figure skating, you have to be aware of what your arms are doing, and you need your feet to be in a very specific configuration to do any sort of jumps and that sort of thing. So I think it's just a different style of skating, uh-huh. and so among hockey players, he might be the very best skater, but among figure skaters, she seems to be among the very best skaters.
Yes.
Which is part of the reason why they wind up together, because she also has some personality issues that don't lend itself very well to pair skating. And so that coupled with the fact that she seems to have this exceptional talent and ability has made it hard for her to find somebody on her level as far as skating.
I mean, the tagline to this movie is the king of the rink is about to meet America's ice queen. And so that sums it up right there. You know, he's the best hockey player and she is, you know, like Elsa in Frozen, basically. Just, you know, has to be alone. I do like that her dad is John Locke from Lost. We get Terry O'Quinn with hair, which is pretty great. But, you know.
Oh, and the worst mustache.
But like, I feel like she doesn't get along with anybody. Like, it's weird.
No.
And, you know, as the movie goes on and She has a boyfriend appear out of nowhere, which is, I guess, expected or understandable, and then he proposes to her, and then she breaks it off and then gets drunk for the first time and throws herself at Doug. And I'm kind of on his side and like, you know, I'm supposed to just drop everything and like get with you. Like, I feel like in her secluded Ice Queen world, she doesn't really have a sense of like how other people think, kind of, right? Like, it's not even just able to interact with them. It's like, well, how do my actions translate into, you know, how other people perceive me? And like, I don't think she cares, which is sort of a good stance to have, but by the time that like she does care about what other people think, like it's this weird 180, and he's like, well, no, like that's weird.
Yeah, well, she's had this like really isolated life where her father is like extremely rich, you know, and all she's ever done is train to be an Olympic figure skater. She didn't even get to go to school. She just had
Yep.
tutors. You know, so I think she just like doesn't really have social skills and has never really needed them.
I do like when Doug asks, "Where'd you matriculate from?" Because that's a fun word for him to drop in that sentence.
Yeah. But in addition to the King of the Rink is about to meet America's Ice Queen, there's some other
Oh,
taglines.
I'm sure they're all amazing. Can you hit me with them?
When true love breaks the ice.
Oh.
And then these next two are kind of a play on the same idea. One, theirs is a love skate relationship. And the second one is the ultimate love skate relationship.
Yep. That's a better one than the previous one, but yes.
Yeah, I agree.
I
I
also
agree.
do love that, as you can imagine, in a story of a mismatched duo, they do fall in love as the movie goes on, and the movie ends with a flawless performance, a kiss, a freeze frame, and then credits. And I was like, oh, this is the perfect ending to a movie.
Yeah, you don't even know if they got the medal or not.
But in their hearts, does it matter? No, because they have each other. What does he say?
True.
He says, don't say we're not right for each other, because the way I see it, we might not be right for anybody else.
Well, that's definitely true. They both seem undateable, but this is something actually that keeps coming up in the movies that we watch are these like really poorly timed declarations of love from like the male character to the main female character. And this is one of the most poorly timed declarations of love. Because he actually says it, is it before their short program or before
No,
their
it's before the
long
long
program?
program because
Okay.
they do the short program and then they go back to the hotel and he's like, I don't know why we can't have a double header. Like, you know, it just feels like foreplay. Like, let's get the foreplay out of the way. Like, let's just get to the main event or whatever. And then I think that's the night. Is that the night that they get drunk? The timeline of all of this is a little fuzzy to me.
Yeah, now that I'm thinking about it, I don't know.
Because I think in my brain, they do the short program. They do the announcers are like, things aren't like, it looks like they're too strict. No, it's not, because they get drunk the night before,
Right.
I think, because he sleeps with the redhead, the other figure skating duo, because that's before the short program, I think, when they go out there, because the announcers are like, it looks like there's two strangers out there, like they're not like skating together in
Yeah.
unison, but like they get really good scores.
Yeah.
And then he says the foreplay line, and then they go back out there, and then before the final skate, which is a long program, that's when he confesses his love to her.
Which, like, right before you step on the ice is probably not the time.
But maybe it gave them the motivation to do the, what's it called, the Pemchenko?
Pemchenko
Pemchenko.
twist.
Is that a real move? I know it's a, is it called that, I guess is the question.
I don't think so. I came across a video of something that looks very familiar with it, although I think the ending of it is different. I think with the Pemchenko, there's like a toss involved, whereas what I watched was didn't end in a toss, but it was called a headbanger,
Yeah, 'cause like
which is
I
actually
think she gets a concussion in this
officially.
movie, basically, like because of this move.
Yeah. Oh, it's extremely dangerous. And has been banned. Like
Good.
it's an illegal move as far as the laws of figure skating are concerned. So like people cannot do that in competition because it is extremely dangerous.
Well, let's describe it for a second. So he grabs her by the ankles and sort of just spins in a circle and like brings her low high, low high, low high, like straight out like a plank. And then it ends when he tosses her into the air to do like a triple axel or something, and then she lands it. But when they're practicing it, he basically drops her on her head and then skitters away. And then they're like, this is too dangerous. We can't put it in the routine. And then that's when, at the end, after he confesses his love to her, she's like, we're going to do it. It's like, well, this is definitely not the right time to do this then.
But she says, "Well, I feel like kicking a little ass or something," which is a great
Yeah.
line. Yeah. Well, the opening scene when they're at the 1988 Olympics with a previous partner of hers, like that partner drops her during their performance. So there's like this kind of like established line, I think, and you could because you see her get dropped a few times throughout the movie, and it's like kind of the ultimate betrayal and the ultimate breaking of trust. And then add that to the kind of weird almost have sex and then don't have sex with the redhead instead situation, and it's like totally broken her trust of him. So
I mean, it's two against the world, really. It's, if she can't trust him, she's literally got no one else, so she's got to, I guess. So how do you feel about, I don't know if it has to be in there or not. I guess it's sort of, it fits, but when he goes back home to his brother, question mark, his brother's bar, and says, what they say that he was working in the he said that he was like working in the military or something, right? And that he was like an
Who's
active
a merchant
duty
marine?
merchant marine. But then he pulls his brother aside. He's like, no, I've been figure skating. And like his brother reacts like he's coming out of the closet. Like he's just like, oh, I can't believe. He's like, I don't know who you are anymore.
Well, because they're these, Minnesota macho ice hockey guys, and it like the least macho thing in the world, at least the perception of one of the least macho things in the
Yes.
world is figure
Yep.
skating, So I think socially that is kind of a pretty big divide to cross.
I think so too. And especially, it feels like he's from small town USA. And so, small mind, I guess, or just not open to the world. And also, this is 25 years ago. And so, there's also that. Or, if this is even. Because this movie, like you said before, spans 4 years, like from 88 to 92, sort of, and like maybe this is even 90, so maybe it's closer to 30 years ago, and it's understandable. Just
I mean, height of the AIDS
yeah.
epidemic, and like I think it's not that far for somebody who thinks of figure skating as something that like sissies do to, from there to homophobia to.
I do wonder. I don't think he says it in this movie. Maybe he does, but I don't remember it. But like he could say, well, like you should see the girl, if he wants to like bro it up with his brother, like you should see the girl that I work with every day. And like I said, like there's even the shot in the or the there's the scene in the movie where he's like, you want me to put my hands where? And like all you have to do like to sort of like get your brother, I guess, back on your like bro side is like say like I get to like do whatever to this girl. I don't know, like there's ways to sort of spin that into a positive, you know what I mean? Like in that close-minded, like I can't believe that you're figure skating. Whatever, like I can't believe that this is what you've become. I think there's a way to say that, but he doesn't. I don't know if he's just caught off guard. I don't know if he's whatever, or if that's just not the movie, what the movie wants to be. But what is this movie rated, by the way? PG-13?
Well, that's a good question. I don't even know.
Because it was on HD Net Movies, which is
PG.
PG. Because it really sort of, I mean, it's not like aggressive, but like it sort of toes the line between like, is this okay or is this not okay?
Yeah, but I think it mostly, like the thing about watching this again that was so satisfying is that there's really not, I mean, there's some like problematic Taming of the Shrew overtones that I don't love. But there's nothing that I have to like make the grand bargain of like, I'm going to let this be okay because I just want to enjoy the rest of the movie, you know, which so often happens when I'm watching something, whether it be like how the woman is treated or there's some sort of like really horrendously ableist thing that happens, or, you know, just have to like the reasonable suspension of like, I'm just going to not get too worked up about this because I just want to be able to enjoy a movie. There's almost none of that in this, which is really refreshing.
Well, because what's crazy about this movie is like it's an hour and 40 minutes and like it flies by. Like there's nothing like, and I don't know if that's just because of the montages or just like because it has a lot of ground to cover, but there's just a lot happening and it almost doesn't have time to slow down and like throw anything like that's like too problematic. I mean, like you said, there is stuff that you sort of made me wish wasn't in there or whatever, but like it almost doesn't care at times about the story. Like it's just about like the action, which is kind of cool. Like I feel like it almost was, you know, I don't know if it's, you know, producers saying like, okay, look, like there's going to be, you know, young girls who come out for figure skating and for the love story, but like we also need something for like the boyfriends that they drag to the theater to like have some kind of like action and like sports and stuff. And I do feel like it's kind of the type of movie that doesn't seem like it would, but sort of covers more quadrants than you think it would.
Yeah. Well, I think that's been, I've found generally when I've like encouraged people to see this movie, I'm like, you think you won't like it, but like, there's something for everyone. It's got incredible physical comedy.
Yep.
You know, like, it's got the love story, it's got the action, it's got the training montages, and this story is like extremely competent. You know, it's like written by somebody who like knows what they're doing,
right?
And like, you know, even if it is predictable, like you said, like it just it hits all the somethings. I don't know what.
It was written by Tony Gilroy, who wrote the Bourne trilogy. He wrote Rogue One, I think. I mean, he has written, like it almost feels out of character. He wrote...
you know what else he wrote?
The Devil's Advocate?
Yup.
So tell me, I know you said your theory fell apart, but you said that this movie was, at one point in your research, there was a grand unifying theory of the Cage Club Podcast Network. So what did you think, like, what was your goal? What was your ambitious, like, how is this all going to piece together? How is this going to be the Pepe Silvia of your
I don't even know. To be honest, I don't even know anymore. I was just kind of like clicking through people's profiles on IMDb while I was watching it. And yeah, I think once I saw that the writer also wrote The Devil's Advocate, which hits both Keanu and Charlize. Also, in his trivia, one of the trivia points is that he's good friends with Steven Soderbergh, so he got cinemakers there. Executive producer Robert W. Cort executive produced the Bill and Ted's movies, as did the one of the other EPs, Ted Field, who also executive produced The Invention of Lying, which features Philip Seymour Hoffman. And I know that because the P.S. I Love Hoffman guys just asked us if we wanted to be on that episode. So otherwise I wouldn't have picked up on that. But the
Which, and that's actually the episode that came out yesterday as you're listening to this. So,
well, there you go. And with that guy, I got the Keanu Kung Fu movie mixed up with Last Samurai with Tom Cruise.
Okay.
So I was like, holy shit, he's got a Keanu movie in there too. Not true. But the cinematographer, Elliot Davis, was also the cinematographer on Man of Tai Chi. So,
which is a great movie, which was Mike's pick for the best Keanu Reeves film. So that counts.
You want to know what else?
What else?
He did Out of Sight and Grey's Anatomy.
Oh, very cool. So yeah, so everybody behind the scenes also had their hands in other pots of things that we've covered.
Right, and like almost all of them worked on Kazam together.
Which is amazing. You know, what's, it's still, it still makes me happy when like we come across a movie on one of the podcasts we do that also has another actor from another podcast that we do. But like at this point in time, we've done like 10 people. You know what I mean? There's almost like an expectation that there's going to be crossover. Yet it still never fails to delight me when we're like, oh look, there's Shia LaBeouf in this Channing Tatum movie. Whatever.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm sure there's connections that I didn't pick up on. If any of our wistful thinking listeners are amazing computer programmer people, I really need somebody to make me a tool where I can put in a bunch of different names and it pulls all of the data from IMDb and then like maps their connections. If I had had more time before we recorded this, I probably would have made some sort of like map. But I'm glad that we didn't have more time because that would have been a weird use of my limited
It would have been
resources.
a little bit of an exercise in madness. What I did find out, well, actually, no, one other connection is DB Sweeney was in Hardball with Keanu.
There you
In
go.
some, I think he might have played like his douchey friend. But what I did
Okay.
not know, which I can imagine you might cover on this podcast one day, was that Moira Kelly voiced Nala in The Lion King.
Oh yeah. Yeah, she
I'm
did.
surprised that
I
like
forgot about that.
there's so much ground for you guys to cover, and you haven't done too many. I mean, you've done probably close to 25 now, so there's a good amount. But like, I'm
I think this is
sort of
actually our 20th episode.
okay. Well, congratulations to both of you,
Thank you.
and 20 more at least, hopefully more with Jordan. But I'm surprised that like people like somebody did Jurassic Park, but like I feel like Lion King is another one of those that like everybody's seen and everybody loves, and I imagine it's only sort of a matter of time until that pops up.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't think a single person has even floated it as an idea.
Because you did The Little Mermaid, right? So that's probably the closest you came.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I don't know. Disney movies are just kind of boring to me, so.
Well, one other thing that Moira Kelly was in, because I was looking, I was like, why don't, because they both seem familiar, and I haven't seen either of them in a lot of things, but
I 100% thought DB Cooper was dead. Wait, that's not even his name.
DB Cooper
DB
was the guy
Sweeney.
who robbed a
DB
bank and
Cooper
then
is
hijacked a
dead,
plane.
maybe. Yeah, and then maybe jumped out of the plane. No one knows.
So,
So DB Sweeney, I definitely thought was dead, but it turns out he's just one of those guys that's been a working actor
yeah.
and has been in like a zillion different things, and that's why he looks so familiar, probably.
So speaking of DB Cooper for a second, we're detouring again because why not? When I had the worst job that I've ever had, which was at a market research company, I literally had no work to do for 3 months. It's when I first really got into podcasting because, or like, into listening to podcasts because I was like, I need to kill my days somehow because this is miserable. But the other thing that I would do to pass the time is I would just go find the longest Wikipedia articles that I could find and read them. And I wound up going down this rabbit hole of like, serial killers and like the FBI's most wanted. So I read DB Cooper's Wikipedia page, and it's fascinating. Like, there's still talk that he might be alive. Who knows? But weirdly, what I was gonna say before we, the other thing when I right after I said talked about Lion King, the other thing that I know Moira Kelly from is Twin Peaks: Fire Walk With Me. She plays Donna, who after oh God, what's her name? Jordan's gonna be so disappointed that I don't remember Donna's name. Donna Hayward, actress. She was originally played by Laura Flynn Boyle in the TV series, and she did not come back for the movie, so they brought in Moira Kelly. And so when I first saw the movie a couple of years ago, I was like, "Oh, this is weird." But sort of tying it back to what we were just saying, DB Cooper, main character in Twin Peaks, Dale Cooper. So sort of
Interesting.
there. So
Well,
it's a grand unifying theory of the Cage Club Podcast Network and also my weird brain too.
somebody, I think the cinematographer, speaking of your weird brain, also shot Little Children, which was adapted from a book by Tom Perata, who
Oh,
wrote The Leftovers.
yes.
So, and then also circling back around to Twin Peaks. The episode that we were gonna record this week before Jordan's tragedy with her computer is Death Becomes Her, which
Oh, I want to see it because whenever you, if you guys do that, I want to see that because I haven't seen that movie.
okay. I was disappointed
Oh no, that's a Bruce
because
Willis one,
I
right?
loved it. Yeah, I loved it as a kid because it was like on cable all of the time, but it turns out it doesn't It doesn't hold up.
That's sad.
But Isabella Rossellini is in it.
Oh.
And she was in Twin Peaks and was a lover and collaborator of David Lynch's for quite a while.
Yeah. And David Lynch, a little bit of a spoiler, but although I think it sort of makes sense if you think about it, we will be covering him eventually, 1 year from now, or not 1 year from Shocking. Now, some year from now, on Cinemakers. So we will see a lot of Isabella Rossellini there.
Yeah. She's so good.
She is very good. You know what else is good? This movie.
It is. Oh my goodness.
I'm trying to think. What other things? Like, it's hard to talk about a movie where, like, everything kind of seems to blur into each other.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of blurs, oh my God, the movie poster is so good. It has this incredible, it's the two of them skating directly toward each other with this great, like, early Photoshop motion blur.
Oh, I'm looking at it now.
Oh, it's so good.
Because I didn't see that one. I just saw the other one where just basically the top half of that poster. But yeah. Whew. Man. That is real wonderfully bad. Wait, so this is... So how many Cutting Edge movies are there? There's like four?
Four.
Have you seen all of them?
I have.
Are any of the other ones good?
Listen. I loved them. Good? Probably not.
All right.
The first sequel, I think, has, like, their daughter in it. So, spoiler alert.
Wait, so how far in the future is it?
You know what? Let me just look them up, and I can tell you.
While you look that up, I did notice that D.B. Sweeney is in a new TV series called Ice, which I thought was pretty coincidental, but it's about diamonds. It's not about ice skating.
Yeah, it's definitely not about actual ice, which is unfortunate.
So if they... Okay, so in terms of timeline, so they kiss for the first time at the 92 Olympics, say they date for a while, so they get married in, like, let's say the end of 93, beginning of 94.
Mm-hmm.
How far in the future is this movie about their kid?
2006, so she would be 12, and she's definitely not 12 in that movie. Who cares?
How old is she? Like, is she like 16 or 18? Like, is she older? Or is she younger?
Yeah.
She's older, okay.
Yeah, she's old enough to be competing at the Olympic, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So a little bit of revisionist history, but that's totally fine.
Right, spoiler alert, it's, even though you don't see them medal in the movie, it is canon that they did win the gold medal.
That makes me happy.
Yeah, me too. So the second one, well, first before I get into that, both Moira Kelly and D.B. Sweeney made a deal with each other not to do a sequel without the other one. They had been offered a script to a possible sequel, but Sweeney said that the script was terrible and the money being offered was insultingly low.
Oh, no.
Since then, a direct-to-DVD sequel and two TV movie sequels have been made without their involvement. So they're not in the sequels, but the sequel does... Jackie Dorsey is their daughter.
Who is she?
Played by Christy Carlson Romano.
Oh!
Whoever that is.
She, okay.
Do you know who
so,
that is?
Yes. So here's another crazy connection. She was on Even Stevens and played Shia LaBeouf's sister.
Oh my God. This movie really is the grand unifying theory of the Cage Club Podcast Network.
Amazing.
At least one degree separated from.
So. I just, what was weird is that I Googled, because I just Googled, what did I just Google? Jackie Dorsey, and it brought up the Wikipedia page for that movie that's about her. But when I was watching the movie, I Googled Pamchenko, and the wiki for this movie comes up, but the word is not on that page. So however Google caches wiki pages, I guess at one point Pamchenko had been on the page or something? Because I was like, is this real? That's why I asked you about it. But like, Google knows that people are searching for this movie, even though it's not on the wiki page, which I think is just a marvel of the modern internet.
Yeah. So, yeah, the Cutting Edge going for the gold, the cutting edge chasing the dream.
Okay.
And they're, like, all of them are love stories.
Of course.
One of them, instead of a hockey player, he's, like, a rollerblader.
Are they always mismatched duos?
Yeah, I believe so.
I guess that's just like their thing.
Yeah. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Johnny Weir is actually in one of them because it takes place at, it must be 2008, Chasing the Dream. The one that takes place at the Torino Olympics.
Okay.
And Johnny Weir has like a
Like a cameo,
cameo
okay.
in that one.
You know what surprised me about this movie? That it's a Christmas movie. Sort
Yeah, I
of.
guess
I mean,
so.
they celebrate Christmas. They give each other Christmas presents. They give each other the
Which
worst Christmas presents.
talk about two ships passing in the night. Yeah. Wow. Like they couldn't not know each other more.
And
'Cause he gets her like the hockey jersey
Bobby Hull
of
jersey.
some whoever that is.
He's a great hockey player, but like what's he, like it's a terrible gift for her, but it's this thing that means so much to him that it was
Yeah.
his, and she can't even pretend to fake interest in it.
Yeah, but also like why would you give that to
It's also a
someone? Like
terrible gift for her.
I get why you think like, oh, this is important to me, so it'll be important to somebody else. But like, buddy, that's not how gifts work. What did she get
She gets him
him?
a book.
Oh yeah, Pride and Prejudice or something.
Something. It's like some. Because she's reading by the rink. And that's when they start talking about the school.
In her ice skates without skate guards on. Come on.
I just wrote down that she got him a book. Oh, but then. So, like, there's like. This is the part of the movie where, like, there's these weird interactions and, like, they're sort of revealing themselves to each other, and like he walks in on her while she's changing.
I didn't love this. He like refuses to leave and just is like, here, I got you a Christmas gift. Again, buddy, read the room. Like, not the time.
What was strange to me was that like he sees this beautiful girl, you know, almost naked. Like he's been with her every day, and then the next scene is when they're at that like Christmas party or whatever, and he sees her in the ball gown, and he's like, oh, now I'm in love. Like that's the scene. I'm just like, it could have been like any scene between the beginning of the movie and where we are now, but like this is the scene where you fall in love with her? Like, I guess he just loves her formal side? I don't know.
Well, I think because usually they see each other in workout clothes, you know, which is like not that far off from being naked.
Sure. Oh, it was a New Year's
And they're
Eve party because
usually
they almost kiss at midnight too.
sweaty. Yeah.
But they don't because
Yeah,
he
I wouldn't
averts his.
really classify
Go ahead.
this as a Christmas movie. It's a winter movie, which I think is a broader genre.
There is Christmas in it though.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, he like they almost kiss and like he averts his mouth. I guess he doesn't want to be a homewrecker because this is by he's met her boyfriend by this point, right? Yeah.
Yeah, because he's at the party
Yes.
and he like sees her kiss him at midnight.
Which is devastating to this dynamic mismatched duo. I do like that they, I mean, I don't know why I said that. I don't know if I like that they use her engagement as a way to sort of psych him out. Like, it feels like he's finally confident in what he's doing and like their routine and their partnership. And then she's like, I'm engaged. And he's like, what?
Yeah. I feel like that was just like that was a beat where he needed to get psyched out
Yep.
and they were like, we'll just make her get engaged.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yep. Wait, so let me see here. I'm looking, I'm still trying to like, I'm like reading through my notes to figure out the order of everything. I wrote down that Doug just wants a doubleheader. So wait, so hold on. So they're at the trials, and then he's nervous. He's like, it's gonna pass in 10 minutes. And she says, our
Wait,
routine is only
before you
2 minutes.
even get into that, they go from practicing in private to competing in the nationals.
Nothing in between.
That's not how that works. But anyway,
And not only
continue.
competing in nationals, but like there's only three couples competing in nationals.
Yeah. Well, that you see. I mean, usually there's, because like even with television coverage, it's like this. Like there's a bunch more, but they only show, you know, a few of
Sure.
them.
There is the Oh, right, because it's her ex-partner.
Right, right,
And
right.
his like the ex what Doug calls the ex-husband and his new wife, and that redhead is the one that he sleeps with. And then there's some other couple that, like, there's only like six skaters, and like, I don't even think we see the other two. No, we see them in the German outfits, I think, right? And they,
I think they're Russian.
They're Russian, but the little village, the European village outfits or whatever, the Lederhosen that they trip over.
I don't even remember Lederhosen.
But... I think, I don't know. This movie, like I said, is a blur.
Are you talking about the couple with the woman that has the blonde bowl cut?
Maybe. Probably.
Yeah. It's a very prominent bowl cut. It's so distracting.
But yeah, so they go to Nationals. They do a skate. He says that he wants a doubleheader. They're down to two couples with the second pair being sent out. Then they go out for celebratory tequila shots.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's why the drinking happened.
Yes.
I knew they were celebrating something. I couldn't remember.
And then that's where we get the alcohol celebration montage. And I wrote down that she's drunk in love with him. And then she gives her drunken tirade about just what I need, someone else telling me what to do. And then she says, in case you miss it, I'm throwing myself at you. I'm tearing off my clothes. And you're giving me a rundown of drinking do's and don'ts? But he's kind of, he's right.
Passing in the night. Oh, no, of course. I'm really glad that he was like, no, we definitely shouldn't have sex right now. That was the appropriate thing to do. And also serves the purpose of, like, breaking down that trust between the two of them at a critical moment.
Yep. And then... Oh, okay, so that's where I'm confusing, because they actually do... Because that's all at Nationals, and that's when they go out to celebrate after they advance to Nationals. But then there's at the end is the Olympics. There's the 5 weeks, I think, between the Nationals and the Olympics, mm-hmm. and, like, that's when they add in... the illegal move, which is the Pemchenko, right? Like, that's when he's like, we're going to add this in now. Right. And I was like, what?
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
So dangerous.
And even Doug was like, he's like, what? What's happening here?
Yeah. So they actually trained together for like 2 months learning to figure skate. And the first week that they were shooting, she sprained her ankle. And it's basically a body double for the entire movie, even though apparently she was like a pretty good skater,
really?
Which is unfortunate. Yeah. But for the Pemchenko, it's a dummy that he's just flinging around.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. I got some DB Sweeney quotes. I wrote down DB Cooper. So change that. DB Sweeney quotes from Entertainment Weekly.
Oh, okay.
Interview in 2012.
Okay.
When asked about how he felt about learning to skate for the movie, he said that he had done this baseball movie called 8 Men Out. Quote, I played baseball my whole life in college and beyond and stuff, and I didn't hit left-handed, and I learned to hit left-handed, which was extremely difficult for a baseball player to believably do that. So I guess I felt like I could learn it as well as I could, and then they would just have to use stunt doubles and trick photography and whatever else. I didn't really worry about it much until the first week of filming. Moira had gotten so good at it, and she had started to land jumps. But then she landed funny on a jump, and he says he broke her leg, but it was a sprained ankle. And that was the first time I got really nervous. I was hoping they could film her and I could hide in the background, but now a lot of it was going to be me with her stunt double,
right.
Sharon Carrs. And so I ended up doing a lot more skating than I had planned, and certainly more than the producers had planned. If you skate with an Olympics-level skater, they're going to make you skate so much better. It's like having the world's greatest training wheels. So Sharon was able to make me look a lot better than I would have looked skating by myself.
When we watched Coach Carter for Magic Mike's, there was news. I'm going to find the thing. That's a movie about basketball where Samuel L. Jackson, you know, basically brings this ragtag bunch of misfits into a championship team or whatever. And the actors had to learn 70 plays for the movie. And that's like a lot, I feel like, even for athletes. But then for actors to have to learn 70 basketball plays is like, what? So, like, it's always impressive to me, not only, like, athletes that train and prepare and do all this stuff, but when actors portraying those athletes also kind of go that extra step, it's like, wow, like, okay.
Yeah, for Jaws 3, what's her name? Oh God, who plays Marty McFly's mom in Back to the Future?
Oh God, what's her name? Back to the Future. I do like that this is not the first time, and I'm sure it won't be the last time that Jaws 3 has come up on this podcast. Leah Thompson?
Yeah, Leah Thompson. She learned to water ski for that.
Cool.
And like synchronized water ski.
Wow.
Like one of those pyramid things. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, I mean, that's a cool part of being an actor, is that sometimes you get to learn to have like weird superpowers that you otherwise would never get any like opportunity to learn.
Yeah, because you're literally getting paid to learn how to do something cool. Like,
mm-hmm.
All right. Like, athletes get paid to do cool things, but like you're not signing a basketball contract to learn how to play basketball. But
right.
You know, you can sign in.
They expect you to know that already.
Probably just a little bit, but you can sign on to a movie like with the understanding of like, oh yeah, I'm athletic and know about basketball, but I don't really know how to play basketball. And then you go through, right, like, you know, 2 days or 3 days or whatever and get paid to get in better shape and learn a sport. So that's cool.
Oh, I just found the quote about the Pemchenko from D.B. Sweeney. The way it's designed, I throw her and then I stand still and I catch her. And you can only do that if she's Supergirl and she's going to fly back to me. So it doesn't make any sense at all. So I thought, you know what? I'm not going to really think about it too much. It is what it is. And when I was spinning her around, it wasn't actually Moira. It was a mannequin. That worked out pretty well, except the wig kept flying off the mannequin. So you start thinking about things like, how can I help the wig stay on the mannequin instead of worrying about the impossibility of the trick?
I guess that's sort of the acting equivalent of just concentrate on my forehead, right? Like, just focus in on the specific thing and don't worry about the craziness of what we have to do, but instead just focus on the wig and, you know, the rest of it will just take care of itself, I guess.
Yeah, and it definitely did.
The only other thing I wanted to say about this while you skim through your notes is that the end, when he says something like, you know, about when they did the Pemchenko, he says, you didn't have to. And she says, yes, I did. He asks why. And she says, because I love you. And he says, just remember who said it first. So even in love, they are competitive. So what a couple.
Yeah. What a nightmare couple. Yeah.
But yeah, I'm glad that I watched this movie. I don't know that I'm going to watch the sequels, but.
Yeah, you could probably skip them. They're not mandatory watching. Like this, I feel like everyone needs to see. The sequels, not so much. Because they're basically the same movie, but worse.
With worse, like with less recognizable actors. Not that these guys are very recognizable as it is, but.
Yeah, and Moira Kelly is just so good in this. She has, like, such good faces.
Yep.
Her reaction faces are always really so good. And as a woman who lived through the great eyebrow scare of the early aughts, it's always really nice.
Wait, what does that mean?
Women with natural eyebrows. I don't know if you remember, but in the early 2000s, women plucked their eyebrows within an inch of their life, and there were just these really tiny, skinny, ridiculous-looking lines of hair, or sometimes just eyebrow pencil.
Huh.
Everyone looked really surprised all of the time. It was awful. It was a very dark time. But I love women with natural eyebrows because I'm like, oh, remember a simpler time when we didn't have to turn our faces into something really weird looking. But anyway.
Oh, there was something else. What else did I want to say? Have you guys announced, have you said what the next movie we're going to do is or no?
No, but we can.
It is another movie that I have not seen, but like I admitted on the Casper episode, the star of this next movie was my first childhood crush. So I am super excited to see. Drumroll, please. I think I know the name of the movie, but I don't want to get it wrong, so I'm going to let you say it.
Ice Princess.
Yes.
Starring?
Michelle Trachtenberg. Harriet the Spy herself.
Yeah, and Kim Cattrall.
What I like is that we have the Ice Queen in this movie, and we are going to the Ice Princess.
Mm-hmm. Next movie. Oh, it's definitely part of lineage. I mean, that was kind of one of the reasons why I wanted to do a figure skating movie podcast, because there's definitely, I mean, this is a whole genre. There are with genre conventions of its own, and all sorts of interesting, weird connections between movies. But in Ice Princess, Michelle Trachtenberg uses the power of physics to overcome both figure skating and class inequalities. So I'm really excited to watch it again.
I am super excited to watch it for the first time. That sounds great.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Nothing can stop her from realizing her dream to be a champion figure skater.
So in the Olympics, is the ice skating the first half or is it the second half?
First half.
And so, so that will be out. So when the next episode comes out, it's right around the start, right? Or no?
Yeah.
Or in the middle, sort of, somewhere.
No, it's definitely, it's like right at the start. I think the next day.
Okay.
Tomorrow, as you listen to this, will be the first day of the Olympics.
Well, not this one, but
or
the next one.
Maybe opening start. No, this one. Because this one's going to be coming out this week.
Right, but the Olympics don't start this week.
So, you are right. You're definitely right.
Calendars, man.
I forgot what day it was. Yeah, I have no idea where I am. So, yeah. the Olympics are starting in a couple weeks. When Ice Princess comes out, I think the opening ceremonies are, like, the next day. And ice skating is, like, that whole first week and a half. And then it's other stuff after that, including but not limited to hockey. And we might be doing a hockey movie.
Oh, man.
As well.
What are your three favorite non-ice skating Winter Olympic sports?
Definitely curling.
Curling's definitely great. Maybe number one.
Been a huge curling fan since 1998 Nagano Olympics. Oof.
I remember in 1998, I was in fifth grade, and I had, I don't remember if it was the flu or something, and I was home for a week, and that week was the Olympics, and I was like, oh, this is, I could not have timed this better.
The seeds were planted.
The best.
So curling, you know, I have to look at a list, because
I'm going to say, I don't know if it's my favorite, but I somehow can watch an entire 4-hour cross-country skiing race, or or what's the one?
I like the biathlon, because sometimes they have to lay down and shoot something.
Right, and they're, it seems, I mean, not that it seems like an easy shot that I could do, but you're like, these are world-class athletes, and they're just, like, so spent from having skied miles and miles and miles, that, like, they're out of breath and can't shoot straight. It's like,
yeah, well, that's why the biathlon's so crazy.
Yeah. I also do like the speed skating.
I don't know.
You don't do it?
No, not really. I don't know. I'm not really that into sprinting in the Summer Olympics either. It's kind of boring.
What I'm into is just whenever there's like a dominant performance, and I feel like in speed skating, whether it's individuals or teams, it seems like more often than in any other sport, there's just one. Like, it's not necessarily exciting to watch because it's not like a good close matchup, but I feel like, you know, the Swedes or the Finnish or the Netherlands, the orange clad Netherlands,
they dominate.
Just dominate and just like.
I mean, that's why it's kind of boring, is because, like, it's just like, oh, okay, Netherlands won again. Cool.
Yeah. But you got to give them props.
Yeah. So, yeah, curling, I think I would combine like bobsledding and lugeing, anything where you're like hurling your body down some ice, I think is really fun. It's super dangerous and interesting to watch. And hockey. I always liked hockey. Although I think hockey suffers from a lack of inspired shooting. Like, the way that football has just completely engineered this entire, like, camera system of being able to shoot it and make it really dynamic and interesting. Like, hockey needs something like that because it's hard to see.
Well, they did the glowing puck in the 90s and everybody hated it.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say hockey, but it's just, hockey is great in the Olympics, but it's also like, well, it's going to come down to the U.S. and Canada, and maybe Russia. You know what I mean? Like, there's no other countries that can compete. Like, they don't even care, I don't think.
No, that's not true. I think Sweden is big. Like, the what's his face? It's on the Rangers, is Swedish.
Lundqvist?
Yeah, that guy.
That guy.
Very handsome guy. Yeah, I think, you know, the Nordic countries, where the places where it's cold out and you can just like play hockey in your backyard.
Yeah.
And people grow up doing that.
But yeah, the Olympics rule.
Yeah. Do you have any predictions for who's going to win figure skating?
I don't know enough because, like I was saying to you, like, I am all in when the Olympics are on, but there's something about the qualifying that I just don't. I think just because I watch so much other stuff and I'm like, okay, these 2 weeks of my life, I know that I'm setting aside for the Olympics, but like the months and years leading up to it, like I can't devote 3 hours a night for a week or two to watch the qualifying, to watch the nationals or whatever. So I don't know. I am rooting for USA. Get super patriotic during, but I just hope, I mean, I don't hope that any of, you know, our skaters get hurt, but I would like to see Ashley Wagner out there in some form, somehow.
Yeah.
Because I love her.
Well, we got, the women's field isn't as strong.
So Gracie Gold's not there, right? You said she's hurt? There.
Well, Gracie Gold decided to take some time off earlier this year. She also is dealing with an eating disorder and depression and anxiety, and we wish you the best, Gracie. And
so who are the three?
She was out.
Who are the three women skaters? You mentioned one name before.
Mirai Nagasu. She got left off the team, or she got on the team as an alternate last time. Mm-hmm. Karen Chen, who is a really interesting and creative skater. She, I think, like composed her own music and like embellished her own gloves with embroidery and stuff like that, and maybe even choreographed her own thing. I don't know. I think, but she's still very young, so I think this may or may not be her time to shine. And then the third one is Brady Tennell, who kind of came out of left field. Although Tara Lipinski claims that she's been saying all season that Brady Tennell is going to kill it. And then she came out of nowhere and, like, won nationals. So, yeah, we'll see. I think all three of them are still very young.
Just further proof that Tara Lipinski knows what she's talking about.
Yeah. But I mean, that's the great tragedy of the Olympics, is like this super high stakes thing. And because it only happens every 4 years, like sometimes you're just the wrong age and like your peak doesn't quite line up with when the Olympics are. And that's so sad to me.
And that's what was so cool about Itania, where it's like, you know, she thought she had basically aged out of it, and they're like, no, we're not doing 4 years, we're gonna do 2 years, and so she was able to get back into it. So
yeah,
I mean, that's gonna happen.
I wish
again,
the Winter Olympics was every 2 years.
Oh man, me too.
I think the men's field will be interesting to watch, at least the U.S. men. We have Nathan Chen, who is really fantastic, Adam Rippon, who I mentioned before, and Vincent Chu, who is on the young side, but also somebody to keep an eye out for.
Cool.
We only sent one pair skaters to the Olympics, which is, I think, a married couple. And then we sent three ice dancing couples, Madison Chalk and Evan Bates, Madison Hubel and Zachary Donahue.
Who,
I know. Well, it's that generation of, like, every little girl named Madison is finally. That's the weird thing about the last couple of Olympics, is that I've realized that, like, now I'm older than a lot of the athletes.
Oh, yeah.
And not that I, like, ever have been athletic in any stretch of the imagination, whatever, even come close to being in the Olympics. But, like, it's kind of one of those things, like, oh, guess I'm never going to be in the Olympics now.
Well, like, it was weird when I started becoming older than, like, you know, professional athletes. But then, like, you watch, like, college football, and you're like, oh, these kids are like 19, 20. Like, they're not even, like, they're babies.
Yeah.
And then the Olympics are even younger. It's just like, wow.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
The third ice dancing couple,
Madison?
Is, no. only the first two have
only
Madisons.
Two Madisons.
The third is the Shib-Sibs, the Shibutanis. They're a brother-sister do
is that weird?
Poop and skate.
Feels
together.
Weird.
Sometimes it's weird. They are not that weird, thankfully. They don't get too sexy. Like, some of the other ice dancing and pairs skater couples get, like, too sexy for my for my comfort. I'm not here to get sexy. Like, we're here to skate. Like, relax.
Not here to get sexy. I'm not here to hear lyrics in your songs.
Yeah, that's another thing. I don't know if the Olympics are going to allow lyrics, though. Because U.S. figure skating recently allowed it within the last season or two. I don't know about the Olympics, but yeah, some of those pairs are just like, woof, whack. Like, cool it. People are watching. But I guess some people are into that sort of thing. But the shim sibs generally keep it pretty pretty PG.
Pretty above the belt.
Which is good. Yeah.
Pretty cutting edge PG.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. Otherwise,
but
it'd be
I think
real
they
weird.
Kind of, yeah, they ate some shit at the Nationals, though. And they've been kind of like the top of the field for a while. So it was a bit of a fall from grace for them.
Bit of a fall from Gracie Gold.
Also that.
Also that. Do we have anything else to say about the cutting edge? Because I don't.
I don't think so. Just this quote from an essay by Amanda Dobbins.
Who's that?
Who wrote, I don't know, some lady who wrote something on Vulture in 2012. Topic is an important sociological artifact. Topic is late 90s girl code, a way of letting others know that you share the same values and taste in scrunchies. You believe in figure skating. You believe that true love can triumph. And you have watched The Cutting Edge on cable 4 million times like the rest of us. End quote. Although, ugh, God, she used both a semicolon and a dash in that last sentence, wow. Which is a lot. But
have you ever used Topic in conversation?
Oh, I'm sure I have.
And like, how, like, what's the context? Like, just like, or is it like any part of speech you want it to be?
I think it could be any part of speech that you want it to be, but it's also like a life comes at you fast kind of thing.
Okay.
I think that's, or like, you thought you knew what you were doing and you definitely don't.
Fair.
Or just any time you physically humiliate a man.
Toe pick.
Also great. I guess that does it for The Cutting Edge. Just part one of our Olympic themed.
Our Olympic coverage.
Series. Our 2018 Winter Olympic coverage.
Oh, Jordan says hi. Jordan says hi to the podcast.
Jordan says hi. She may or may not be back for the next episode. We hope that she is.
Thoughts and prayers.
Thoughts and prayers. Hashtag prayers for Jordan. Donate to the Jordanese New Computer Community Fund.
Yeah, we'll get a Kickstarter going.
Yeah. So anyway, what did I say next? I don't even know. How do I end a podcast? You'd think I would have figured this out by now.
I don't know.
Joey, what do you want to promote or plug or talk about?
What do I want to talk about? I mean, go to cageclub.me. You can find all the episodes of this very podcast. You can also find all the episodes of all of our podcasts. Next month, not only the Olympics starting, but we also have at least one new show, if not two new shows. I think that you might have, I don't know if you've mentioned on the show before, but I know it's definitely a show that's going to be of interest to you, is that Tobin Addington and his sister, the Ad Sibs, not the Shib Sibs, but the Ad Sibs, are starting The Contenders, which is shining a light on the unruly women of cinema. So they're
which
talking
I'm about very
movies
excited
about. That are either directed by women or starring women or, you know, focus on strong women themes and stuff like that. So their first episode, I believe, is February 6th with the movie The Contender. And then I will be on the second episode, February 20th, Wonder Woman. So pretty exciting. So we've got one new show next month, if not a second one. And then Mike Manzi, who has been on, he was on the Sandra Bullock. Did the Sandra Bullock podcast that didn't happen, did that have a name? Because I know it was one for her and one for her. But did that ever standalone have a name or no?
Oh, I don't think so.
Well, he was back on, what was that, episode 2, I guess. And so
yeah, The Net.
he will have a podcast coming out that I'm on, that you are on, that Tobin is on.
Yeah, we talk about Jaws 3.
And also, did you do Jurassic Park 3 too?
I did. So, yeah, we just recorded that the other day.
You are on the first season more than I am, so good for you.
Though I think we're going to both be on the Resident Evil 3 episode together.
I don't even remember what I signed up for, but that sounds about right. but yeah, cageclub.me for all those things. You know, we have more than a dozen podcasts right now, so there's a lot of things always going on. But yeah, so yeah. I like this one. As I've said before, I don't know if I've said it on air here or elsewhere, but this one's the most grab bag. I guess the contenders will also be sort of a bit of a grab bag too, but like, I never know what's coming next until you send the episode to me. So everything else sort of follows this pattern where you can see what's coming next, but this is just like, hey, what do we want to talk about? And it's exciting. So I like that. So keep up
the good work. We like to keep it open concept. And also we have people cancel on us a lot at the last minute.
So. Trying to keep people on their toe picks.
Toe pick. That would have been a perfect place to end, but I recently fired up the old podcast machine on my other podcast, In Sickness and in Health, where you can find anywhere you get your podcasts or at insicknesspod.com. Our first episode back is with my friend Christopher Snyder, who has been on the show several times before. We like to check in with each other every couple months and talk about the state of the world and the state of whatever is going on in healthcare and stuff. We talked about the diabetes episode of Black-ish and some documentaries that I watched. And we'll be back again in February. Another episode.
How many episodes have you done?
Numbered episodes, I think the last one was 49.
All right.
But I did some other special episodes and bonus episodes and stuff like that that don't have numbers. Cool. So more than 50 episodes. So if you look up In Sickness and in Health on whatever podcast machine you use, there's actually now two podcasts called In Sickness and in Health. Mine is the one with all the episodes and all of the positive reviews. The other one started like back in May and only has 5 episodes. That's not me.
So. Well, that's what happened. Like when we started Cage Club, like we're like, we know that other people have Nicolas Cage podcasts, but within 3 weeks when we were doing three, I don't know why we did 3 a week, but we did 3 a week. But like within 3 or 4 weeks, we'd already put out more episodes than these other shows had done ever. And we're like, oh yeah, like we're just gonna, not necessarily the best Nicolas Cage podcast, but in terms of completeness,
but the most prolific.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Where in 6 months we put out 78 episodes, which is, whew.
I'm happy to have more people doing podcasts on the topic that, or the related to the topics that I podcast about. I think that, you know, the more the merrier. When I started In Sickness and in Health because it was a thing that didn't exist and it was a thing that I wanted to hear, so I had to make it. Since then, there has been a ton of chronic illness and disability podcasts that have popped up, and I am thrilled about
that.
You're a
pioneer.
I just don't want them to have the same name as me because it's bad for both of our SEO.
I mean, it's especially bad for her SEO.
Yeah.
Like, you already have you have an established brand, and she's like, hey, you know, I'm gonna name my company Google. I'm sure that's gonna, you know, work out pretty well.
I'm just gonna spell it the original spelling of Google, Google.
Who? I'm sure that is some company that, like, somebody thought was a brilliant idea to do, and then, their life is basically, did you mean Google? But spelled the actual way, and just like, or not the actual way, I guess the incorrect way, but.
Hers, though, does get to a fundamental insecurity that I have, which is that I am not a doctor, and she is, but I've done more podcasts than
But she's not a doctor of copyright.
For me. She's not a doctor of copyright. Sadly, neither am I.
Oh, well.
But, oh, well. Anyway.
Toe pick.
That was all I had to see. Why don't you have to have you next to me? From that moment, I knew. that you'd be all I'd ever need. And there's a place inside my heart nobody's touched before. And when I found you, I found all that I've been searching for. You turned my world around. All I know is it feels like forever. Tell me.